Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and went to high school at the Shrine of the Little Flower in Royal Oak. In 1980, he bought a bankrupt local deli and used his last $200 to reopen its doors. Today, he employs 800 people, operates 12 restaurants, 8 of which are on sites of failed restaurants, and 7 catering facilities. His name, Matt Prentice. And we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Matt Prentice. Matt, thanks for coming on. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start by telling us about your childhood and your parents?
Okay. I was born in Detroit, grew up on Prevost Street. We lived in Detroit until I was 7 years old. And then my parents bought a house in Royal Oak where I lived until I married. My mom is a stay-at-home homemaker. My father wanted her at home, and she did a great job. And my father was a mortgage banker. He, very bright man, had 5 degrees, started in the banking business, and eventually went out on his own and opened up a mortgage company that's now listed on the NASDAQ and is thriving. And he unfortunately passed away when I was only 20. So my mom's a Hungarian descent. That said, all Hungarians will tell you they're great cooks. She really is a great cook and probably one of the best bakers I've ever seen. And we still use a lot of her recipes in our restaurants today. So
what did you learn from your mom and your dad?
My father was quite intellectual. Even though he owned his own business, he wasn't an entrepreneur, I would say. He was more of an employee type of business owner. And he would never tell me what I needed to do. If I did something that he didn't feel was right, he would proclaim it to be a bad decision, or if it was a really bad decision, a stupid decision. And I came to learn that if he thought something was a bad decision, or worse yet, a stupid decision, that he was generally right. But he never rammed anything down your throat. He was a very gentle man, a giant man, 6'3", 270 pounds, but gentle as gentle could be. My mother was real big on education and making sure that we did what we had to do to be successful, and a very strong woman, and very friendly to everybody, welcoming person. If you moved into the neighborhood, she'd bake you a cake and walk it over so that she was always the first person that you would meet in the neighborhood and make you feel welcome. And friendships that she has on the street where I grew up are, some of them are over 50 years old at this point. So,
what was the first job you ever had?
I was a paperboy. It was very difficult for a youngster to get a job back then. I had a person on my street that was the paper delivery person, and I told him that if he decided to get a real job, you know, he was quite a bit older than I, that I'd like to have his route, and I'd even purchase it from him. And ultimately I did, and I was even entrepreneurial at 9. After that, I took on a second and a third route and did that for a few years.
How did you get started in the restaurant business?
Well, after a few years delivering papers, I was pretty sick of getting up at 4 in the morning and putting the stuff on my bicycle and riding them all around town. And I liked to be self-sufficient. I didn't ever want my parents to assist me with anything, financially anyway. So I would it was, I'd gotten out of school for the summer, and I was walking by a nearby restaurant and decided that maybe a restaurant would give me a job. Now, it was illegal at the time for a 12-year-old to work in a restaurant. In fact, to this day, you have to be 16 years old to legally work in a restaurant. But I was a pretty good-sized kid, and I walked in, and they were having a really, really bad day. There was a cook, a waitress. They were jam-packed. They were grossly overwhelmed. And I looked at the waitress, and I said, "Do you need any help?" And she looked at me as though I were a prize pig, and she put an apron on me and put me to work. And that was my start in the restaurant business.
It's 1980. You find a bankrupt deli, and you take the last $200 of your name that you have, and you reopen its doors.
Well, it didn't work. It didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. I was in culinary school at the Culinary Institute in New York, and I had saved enough money for my first year's education. Back then, it was about $10,000. This is in 1977 to go to school there with room and board, and I paid for it myself, and I was hoping to get a job in New York while I went to school. The only problem is when you're in a little town like Poughkeepsie, and you have thousands of culinary students all going to the same school, getting a cooking job is not the easiest thing in the world to do. And I couldn't find employment. Consequently, when it came up to my externship, which is an 18-week period that you have between your first and second year, you have to go home and hone your skills. I had my externship waived. I had quite a bit of experience by the time I left for New York. I had already cooked for 6 years. Working my way up through different levels of restaurants. And I asked them to waive my externship. That way I could go work wherever I wanted to, i.e. to the person who would pay me the most. And there was a man who had a series of delis who was willing to pay me quite a bit of money to come in and manage his operations. And I took over one of the operations and worked it with his wife. And evidently they liked me. I got an offer from a fine dining restaurant to be a sous chef. I put resumes out everywhere. And I told them that I was going to leave because this was more to the level that I wanted to get into, and they were willing to pay me as much as he was. So I tendered my notice, and he asked me why I was leaving him. And I said, "Well, this really isn't a challenge." And he said, "If you want a challenge, I have a challenge for you." And he sent me to his worst performing operation and gave me carte blanche to do whatever I needed to do to turn it around. At the time, I didn't know that he was having financial difficulties, and I guess I should have figured it out the first time payday was delayed a couple days, but he gave me a little bit of money to renovate the unit, and I changed the name of it to Deli Unique, and started to turn it around. Shortly thereafter, he came to me and he said, "I have to close the operation." And for some reason, I said, "Well, if you're going to close it, why don't you sell it to me?" And he did.
We're talking to Matt Prentice. And when we come back, we'll ask him how he's been so successful in such a tough business. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Matt Prentice. Matt and his 800 employees feed over 5,000 customers each and every day. Matt, the restaurant game is extremely tough. How have you been successful?
Well, I don't know that I always have been. I mean, if you open a lot of restaurants, especially all different kinds of concepts, you're not always going to hit home runs. Thankfully, I've hit a few more home runs than I have strikeouts. But I think what we do at our company that is special is that we try to create family environments where people enjoy coming to work, where they learn every day, where they have an ability to grow. Of my first 15 employees, 8 are still with me 25 years later. In my business, that's highly unusual. But we have we have strong learning environments, strong teams, and people are our assets. I mean, all I have is my reputation and my staff. And those who think that restaurant assets, i.e. booths and tables and cooking equipment, if you think they're worth something, you only need to ask a banker. He'll tell you they're worth nothing. Costs a lot to buy, but once they're in place, they're not worth a whole hell of a lot. So it's your people that make you, and I'm very lucky. I have great people.
Every day, your 800 people are feeding these 5,000-plus customers. Every day, there's little fires, and once in a while, there's large fires. You, as the leader, have to keep your cool and handle one after another. Working these 14-hour days, how do you do that?
I don't usually get excited about anything. Really, the bigger the fire, the more calm I get. I learned very early in my career that I needed to keep my temper in check. I have a horrifying temper that I put in a closet decades ago and haven't let it out since. So I think my people expect me to be calm, and the bigger the problem, usually the calmer I am and the more decisive I am, and I give them direction and they follow, and we can pretty much get through anything when that happens.
Speaking of big fires, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, was the famous blackout on August 14th, 2003.
Ugly day. Just an ugly day. I was sitting in one of my dining rooms booking a very large party with a guest, and the lights went out. And I walked outside. We weren't getting anything in the building, so I turned on my car and listened to the broadcast. And it became clear that this wasn't your normal electricity loss. So we were hoping at first that it'd only be down for 24 hours. And I immediately instructed my staff to throw out everything that was online in all the restaurants. We were on our cell phones, thank God for them. And we duct taped down all of our walk-in refrigerators so that we could make sure that the refrigeration that was in there didn't leak out. And we called it a day. There was nothing else we could do. But that weekend, we had an enormous amount of functions, including a Dream Cruise function for Ford Motor Company for 3,000 people. We have a refrigerated semi that we own, and we loaded up all the Ford party into the semi. And then first thing Friday morning, I arrived with my teams, and we realized that we weren't going to be able to execute the restaurants without power. We were now worried about the Friday function for Ford for 3,000 and the 10 weddings and bar mitzvahs that I had on Saturday night. I made the decision to take all the food from all the properties and load them in on trucks and take them to Temple Israel, which is one of our larger operations. And they have just a huge power source supply when the power goes out. It holds enough gasoline to fill a fleet of trucks. And we loaded down all of our refrigerators there with everybody's parties. One thing that we didn't contemplate was that those refrigerators would be water-cooled, and Detroit, at a given point in time, stopped pumping water. So in the middle of the night, when the water wasn't cooling down the refrigeration systems, they all shut themselves off. And we arrived the next morning to 10 parties full of food that had all hit 80 degrees and had to go into the dumpster. And since none of the restaurants were open, I got people in from everywhere around town. I had people running to wherever they could to get food. And I'm proud to say that all 10 of those parties went off and nobody ever knew what we went through. But to say it was a tough day would be a huge understatement.
What do you look for in employees?
Somebody that wants to be successful. Integrity, a team player, somebody that doesn't mind saying that they're wrong, people without egos. Generally, it's the core person, not necessarily what they know, because you can always teach them what they need to know, but the core person's got to be right. One bad apple can screw up the entire family atmosphere relatively quickly. And our teams, when they get to a certain point, if you have a really successful restaurant and the team's been in place, they'll hold those bad apples accountable. But usually in the first 2 to 3 years that a restaurant is open is when they're very vulnerable to people that don't want to play nicely.
The Matt Prentice Restaurant Group, what is its culture? And then how do you propagate that culture throughout these 800 employees?
The main thing is we teach through a guest service seminar, which is what we strive for, is creating 100% guest satisfaction. That's a lofty goal because literally it's impossible to hit for most any business, but definitely in the food business, as people all have different tastes, and I may serve a medium rare steak that's perfectly medium rare, but the guests really wanted their steak medium. They just don't know that medium is a little bit more cooked than medium rare, and it may come back at us. What we try to teach our employees is we need to achieve 100% guest satisfaction. We empower them all to do whatever it takes to achieve that level, i.e. if a guest has a problem, they own it, they are the decision maker, and the company does not have any problem with them doing whatever they have to do to make that guest happy.
We're talking to Matt Prentice, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Matt Prentice. He and his team are the largest privately owned caterer in Michigan. Early on, you were lucky enough to meet Sam Frankel, the developer of Somerset and the man most responsible for creating Troy, Michigan. What have you learned from him?
Oh, a lot. I was only 22 years old when I met him. I had catered a bat mitzvah for a person that he walked with every morning, and he was having some food problems at Somerset in the center of the mall. They had a little cafe that was kind of a mess, and the attorney recommended that he speak with me. I had never been in Somerset Mall, and at the time, Somerset was a lot different than it is today, but it was the center, the diamond, if you will, in the center of his development ring, and he was very passionate about the mall. And the attorney agreed to host us for a meeting, and he introduced me to him, and he asked me what I thought of the cafe that we were in, and I said, well, not much, sir. And he came out with a much stronger statement, and that I won't repeat on the radio. But he charged me with trying to find a way to fix that cafe, so I came to him with a business plan. And I don't think his people thought that it was a good idea to jump into an operation with somebody of my age. And he was very entrepreneurial, and he asked me how I was going to build this cafe. And I said, well, I thought maybe we'd become partners. And he put up a lot of dollars to build it. And that cafe was my second restaurant. And he asked me how much I thought I'd gross in our first year of operations. And I said, well, I think I can do $400,000, sir. And he says, you better do $500,000. And we ended up doing $1 million our first year, and it was profitable right out of the gate. And the cafe's lease ended a couple years ago, but it had a 20-year run. And he would often call me into his office for meetings. And I was a proverbial fly on the wall, if you will. He would be talking to me, but in one moment, and then he would have an idea, or he would need something would pop into his head, and he'd stop talking to me, and he'd instruct his assistant to get somebody on the phone. And I would sit there and listen because there was nothing else I could do. And so he would bark out, Edna, get me Henry. And all of a sudden he would start talking to them, and at the time he was trying to save Orchestra Hall, which he accomplished. And I quickly learned that Henry was Henry Ford, or he would say, "Get me Mac," excuse me, Max on the phone. And I then realized it was Max Fisher. I had no idea. I was a middle-class kid from Royal Oak who I was dealing with. And you never hear much about him because he keeps to himself. He's a remarkable man. And the thing that he taught me most was, if you are a part of a community, you need to give back to that community that supports you. And I watched him work tirelessly to save Orchestra Hall. And I watched him behind the scenes giving back so much to the community.
We're talking to Matt Prentice, who's been in business for 25 years. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Matt Prentice, the CEO of Matt Prentice Restaurant Group, which will do $36 million in revenue this year. And hopefully at the end of the year have a black number at the bottom.
It'll have a black number, yes.
Many, many people today, Matt, are losing their jobs. And some of them are starting their own businesses. What advice would you give those people?
Starting your own business is very difficult. Think it through. Get advice from people in the business that you're going into. Be prepared to go through a lot of pain, and be passionate about what you're getting into, and make sure that you give it everything you have, because in this environment, you can't make many mistakes before you're done.
What is success?
Success is creating an environment where people can grow, where people can feel successful, where people can make an impact on the community that we live in. And I think the ultimate success is giving back to that community.
You truly love your people. They're not employees, they're family. Many employers take the position, don't get too close to your people, you know, keep your distance. You're one of them. Why do you do that?
The restaurant business is a tough business, and sometimes it's, on especially busy nights, crazy weekends, it's like going to war. I mean, I may run around to 6, 7, 8 places on a Saturday trying to assist. If I ask those people to go to war for me, I have to treat them the way that I would want to be treated if I was killing myself for somebody else. Now, with 800 employees, I can't know them all and know something about each and every one of them, but I try to learn as much as I can so that I can ask the right question. For example, the first meeting I had today, I asked the young chef how his dad was, because his dad had been having some health issues. It's important that people feel comfortable with you, so I have a few rules. I mean, even though I'm an employer of 800, the employees automatically want to call you Mr. Prentice because you're the CEO of the company. That's not allowed. So as soon as the Mr. Prentice comes out, I correct them and I say, "Matt, please." If they keep calling me Mr. Prentice, I'll say, "You know, you could really make me happy if you do just one thing." And they'll say, "Well, what is that?" I said, "Stop calling me Mr. Prentice, Matt." I go to work every day in chef clothes. I work side by side with my people. I think my people like that. And they can relate to the guy in charge because he's just one of us. And I think that's very important.
15 months ago, you opened Coach Insignia, a restaurant in the Renaissance Center on the 71st and 72nd floor. How has that done?
Coach is doing pretty well. It was definitely the hardest restaurant that I've ever had to open. It's also the most exciting restaurant that I've ever opened. When you're a kid from Detroit, you know, growing up, watching the Renaissance Center being built, and now today, every time I go downtown, you know, one of the first things you kind of hone in on is the big GM icon sitting at the top of the building, and you have to step back a little bit and say, God, I can't believe I'm up there. I'm also in a partnership arrangement with the largest industrial company in the world. I mean, that makes me proud, and it makes my people proud. But the operation is difficult in that our kitchen is on the A level of the Renaissance Center, which is the main level where you would walk in off a street level, and our finished kitchen's on the 71st floor. Just doing something mundane like taking out the garbage is a not so simple task there. But the restaurant opened and it received 2 4-star reviews. It in its first year has won the Wine Spectator Best of Award of Excellence, one of the few restaurants in Michigan to achieve that status. And it's profitable, which doesn't often happen in the restaurant's first year. It's a very difficult thing to achieve. So we're very happy with it, and we're very excited. Super Bowl's coming up, and we're sold out for Super Bowl, and we've got some really great parties up in the restaurant. And we're looking forward to our second holiday season at the restaurant. Now, the first one was kind of tough because the staff was learning to become a family. This one will be much easier because they now are a family.
You and your wife, Lisa, have 4 children, mm-hmm. ages 14 to 20.
Yes.
Do they work, and why?
3 of the 4 work within the restaurants, or my eldest works in the restaurant when she's home from college. At college, she works a desk to make extra money. My son is a waiter in our Flying Fish Tavern operation, and my second to the youngest daughter is a cashier. And my youngest daughter does work, but she's still babysitting. She hasn't gone into the restaurants yet, but I would imagine that will come along shortly.
Many of their peers in the suburbs don't work.
Yes.
No doubt they come and say, Dad, my friends laugh at me.
No, they wouldn't tell me that. They're too proud for that. But I don't know if they laugh at them or not. But a lot of the kids don't work. And if it's because they can't find a job in this environment, that's certainly understandable. But we think it's important, both my wife and I, that they do work, that they learn the value of money, that they learn how to be a team player, that they are doing things for themselves as opposed to having things done for them. And all 3 that are working for me were all very proud when they got their first paycheck. And that's something kids should experience, I think, as young as possible. Now, most children can't work until they're 16. If you own a business, your children can work without violating labor law. So I get mine to work as soon as I can because I think it's important that they learn what the world is like.
Do you cook for Lisa, or does she cook for you?
I cook one day a year at home. I cook on Christmas Day. My family all comes over. My wife is Jewish, so her family, while not celebrating Christmas, have nowhere to go because everything is closed. And it kind of gets bigger every year. We're, 50, 60 people. So I cook on Christmas Day, and everybody comes over, and we have a good old time drinking wine in the kitchen while I cook. But outside of that, she'll cook for me, which is probably a very hard thing to do. Cooking for a chef can't be easy. So,
when we come back, we'll ask Matt Prentice about the advice that Sam Frankel gave him, giving back to the community. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're with Matt Prentice, who's been in business for 25 years in the restaurant game. Matt, you founded the Variety Produce Rescue Mission in Detroit. What is it?
I don't know that I would say I founded it. I facilitated it. It was an idea that was brought to me by president of Variety at the time, Rob Allen, who wanted to emulate something in Detroit that occurs in Los Angeles County. And there was a man in Los Angeles, Mickey Weiss, who was in the produce business. And when he retired, he wanted to give back to society. And it galled him the entire time he was in the produce business of how much produce was wasted, where it had gotten a little tainted due to age and then thrown away. Further, cost money to dispose of it. And he thought that that was ridiculous. So he went to Variety in the LA chapter, and he got them to fund a rescue program for the fruit and vegetable in the market that would ultimately get thrown away. And they distributed the produce that they rescued throughout Los Angeles County, and people that would go to shelters or to soup kitchens, instead of eating worthless canned fruit or vegetable that has very little in the way of vitamins and nourishment. And he set up a situation where everybody could get fresh fruit and vegetables 3 square a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Rob wanted to emulate that program here, and we took over the Share Our Strength Taste of the Nation dinner, and we asked Variety for a little assistance. And he told me he'd give me a lot of assistance if I could only get this thing to work. And having relationships with people in the produce business, there are 11 owners of the Union Produce Terminal downtown. Most people think the produce comes from Eastern Market. It doesn't. It comes from a huge terminal that has Eastern Market as one of the places that it delivers to. And a friend of mine facilitated a meeting between the 11 owners and I, and we worked out a situation where we trained a woman to identify distressed produce, and we get it as quickly as possible within hours to gleaners, where it's then distributed throughout the entire Detroit metropolitan area, and sometimes as far as northern Michigan, depending on how much we're able to harvest. The great thing is it costs almost nothing to run this program, and the return is so huge.
What role does faith play in your life?
Well, it's a driving force. I mean, we're all here to make an impact, so that when we go before our Maker, we can show that we weren't put here needlessly. And I try to keep that in the back of my mind every day.
You do so much for so many causes. Variety, Salvation Army, St. Pat's Senior Center. Recently I went to a Rose Hill event, and you show up and you donated the dinner, you made the dinner, and you served the dinner for the group. On and on and on. Why do you do so much?
Well, again, it comes from people have been great supporting me. Without Detroit and the people that live in Detroit, I wouldn't exist business-wise. I believe that giving back comes back to you. I can't tell you how many times people have said, you know, we're booking this corporate event with you, or we've chosen you to do our daughter's wedding because we're so happy with what you do for the community. We try to open every one of our restaurants by having some sort of a party to raise funds for a charity so that we get it started off the right way by giving back to the community that gives to us. I think it's a duty. I'm lucky enough to have gotten to where I've gotten, and I certainly am not going to take credit for it based on my hard work. I think a lot of it is the community that supports me locally, as opposed to necessarily going to another business. So we give back, and my people give back as a group as well. They're actively involved in charitable efforts that the company may have started, and then they've taken and put on their own backs, and they think it's important too.
You've been very involved with Pastor Faith Fowler, who was a guest a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's running Cass Community Services. What have you learned from her?
She's an incredible woman. Just amazes me. I don't think I've ever witnessed anybody that's made more of an impact on our Detroit city streets. And she is helping people that nobody else would help. And making it happen without much money, doing things that I've never seen a charity do. I mean, she's an entrepreneurial minister that will do whatever she can to raise money so that she can feed, clothe, warm, or assist people that have mental illness or drug issues. And she infects everybody around her. And it's amazing. But more so than any charity that I work with, and all of them are great, she makes this huge impact every day that exceeds anything I've ever witnessed. And you can't help but want to help her. Even in our company, and it amazes me how good people are. We have a frequent diner program where people get points for every dollar that they spend. And a couple years ago, in a holiday issue, I offered to allow people to turn in their frequent diner points, and 2,000 points fed 100 people down at Cass. Tens of thousands of points were donated. One group was saving up for what we call Pick a Chef, which is 20,000 points. You have to spend $20,000 with us. And you get to choose between either me or my corporate chef who comes into your home and does a dinner for eight, cooking right in your own kitchen, and wines chosen by Madeline Trifon, our director of wine. And I had a group of guys that ate breakfast in my restaurants every Saturday and Sunday, and they were up to 18,000 points. They were close. And they decided to give their 18,000 to Cass because they could always pay for a meal, and they wanted to make sure that people could. And sent a very nice letter that I sent along with her. And so Faith and the Cass Community Center have, I think, 60, 70,000 points in their bank that they use very judiciously when they have to feed a group, and they call and they cash their points in, and we send food down. So it's a great charity.
What are you the proudest of, Matt?
My children. You know, it's a difficult environment for kids to grow up in nowadays. They said it was fast when we were kids. It's worse now. My wife's done a great job keeping them anchored. They all do well at school. They are all nice to people. And I think that they're all going to be successful, which is obviously every parent's goal.
What are your dreams?
Well, they change quite a bit. I blew through the first set pretty quickly. Just to continue to develop myself and everybody around me, and make not only my company but my family the best that it can be, and continue driving my people to levels that they might not think they could hit otherwise.
Times are tough in Southeast Michigan, all of Michigan. They're going to get tougher before they get better. Are you hopeful about Southeast Michigan?
I've been through five recessions since I've been in business. This is clearly the worst. Detroiters are resilient people. Things are changing. They're changing fast. But I'm sure that we will once again get around the corner and start our way back. It has been a tough 5 years since 9/11, and you're right, it's going to get tougher before it gets better, but we'll get there.
Matt, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for all you do for your employees, your customers, and all of the charitable work you do. Thanks much. Our guest next Sunday will be Mr. Van, Art Van Alslinker. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because anything is possible, Spoh.